All right, so welcome to another Close Assault. This is the second one, at least, unless my timing and release is going to be all screwed up. Again, we are taking themes, small themes, singular topic themes, at least we try to keep it singular topic, and expand on those, whether it's from our own opinion or from what we've read in the community posts, etc. So, as I'm playing my game, Pete, I have no idea what the hell gusts do in the game. And so I've got to dig through the rules, dig through my charts, and I come across different charts, and they tell me what to do. All right, next game, that happens. Game after that, I look for something else. When is too much, Pete? When is too much in looking at the charts? Do you think as a player?
Okay. Yeah, for me, I don't use play aids. I see play aids as a useful pre-game reminder tool. I do not see them as a tool to be used during the game because, in my experience, they slow the game down. Particularly in face-to-face play, where table space is at a premium already, right? You've got, for some people, you know, the dice tower. You've got your dice tower. You've got your spaces for your system counters. You've got your drink, you've got your scenario card, you've got your scenario markers and things like that. So where are you putting all these play aids? You're putting them on a side table? Okay, well, what happens if the play aid you need is at the bottom of that pile? Or that you find that the one you're referring to, you're constantly thumbing through a booklet of play aids. That's not helping you play at a reasonable pace. That's basically you trying to learn the game during the game. Play aids are about clarifying the more difficult or the more convoluted or complex concepts of ASL. That's the time for doing that is before the game. Just like victory conditions. You don't try and work out the victory conditions halfway through the game. You look at them before the game. If neither of you understand it, you work it out beforehand. That's why I get this feeling that some people don't think that you have to do a little bit of work before the game. You know, ASL is not just a pickup game. So yeah, I see all these play aids and I think, yeah, really cool. But really, when you come down to it, if you look at the volume of all those play aids, you might as well just read the damn rule book.
Right. Now, some play aids obviously are useful, right? I mean, some of them we kind of can't do without. Yeah.
Flowcharts.
I got to be honest with you.
But you don't.
I think the flowcharts are the pregame reads, what you describe, like the artillery, like the OBA, the overrun. Those charts are not easy to kind of just kind of peruse. I think if you've got OBA in your game and you say, well, you know, I played OBA five scenarios ago, or I did a whole bunch of shitload of overruns five games ago, you need to go through those charts again because those are probably rule sections. And the rule sections, obviously, we know Chapter C, you know, OBA is kind of convoluted. Reading those flow charts beforehand because they're extensive will clarify that when you come up during the game. So if I'm overrunning you, Pete, and you say, oh, that's bullshit, you don't get this much firepower, and that I, because I'm familiar with the flowchart and where that piece of information is within the flowchart, I can very quickly go through it instead of having to go through the flowchart bit by bit by bit. But I agree with you. Like the charts like the Portage Point cost and reducing your movement factors, to me, that's an irrelevant chart. I've never used that chart.
That's a learning tool. That's a learning tool before you start playing. You
know, right.
That's something. These are aid memoirs to help you learn the processes. The automated flowcharts, the click flowchart, the OBA flowchart on Vazzle. That's a great way of streamlining the process. Because it's yes, no questions, and you click yes or no.
Right.
And that tells you, basically, that tells you what to do. That's a really good time saver during a game, right? If you're online, where time is really valuable. Using the flowchart, an OBA flowchart is really good when you are unfamiliar. Using the play aids can be useful, but do you need to have 20 bloody play aids and refer to all of them during a single game? No, because most of what those play aids are there to help you learn a particular concept before playing. They're not there as a in-game assist.
All right, they're summarizing game concepts before you get to it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, basically, put the work in, people. Read the rules.
Yeah.
Use the play aid. I actually think play aid is a poor term. I think these are rules aids. You know, these are clarifications for learning.
Right.
They're learning aids, and
And we're not.
You're going to bog down the game. You're going to make it a less enjoyable experience for everyone. And that sort of leads on into my thing about slow play being self-destructive. You know, playing reasonably fast. You can, with experience, get to the point you hardly ever need to refer to the rules during play for the basic concepts. All too often, I see people who have not done any pregame preparation having to look at the rules in depth during a game for the most basic core mechanics.
Right. And even like you say, that's where the play aids come involved, is that helps you if there are existing play aids for what you're dealing with, like movement point cost or things like that, or whatever. Review that before. That's your pre-game prep. Therefore, you're familiar with it. You go into the game. It streamlines it, like you say, speeds up play. The other player will respect you a little more because he may not know the answer, but because you've done your homework, you may not be a pro at it, but you're familiar with the concepts, and you bring those concepts to the table quickly, and you resolve the issue straight up, and then you continue the game, and then you hopefully you roll your dice and crush them.
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing is, my ASL playing time is rare and valuable to me. I do not want to be sit there twiddling my thumbs while someone spends 10 minutes trying to work out how to apply a rule. Especially when we've already determined what the scenario that we're playing. We've pre-selected the scenario.
Right.
And we know that it's going to be an amphibious assault, a beach landing.
Yeah, specialists like, something esoteric like that. Yeah.
You need to know those rules before you start play.
Yeah. Or be very familiar.
And this is one of the reasons why I think pickup games are worthless. They're a waste of time.
Right.
They do nothing for either player in terms of embedding the rules, embedding concepts. They're a waste of electrons, especially online, and they're certainly a waste of time when face to face, you've traveled to play face to face.
Right.
Yeah, you've got limited time.
About the only time pickup games would be useful is if both of you already know the scenario, but then again, we've got tons of new scenarios and new packs, as we mentioned, like the Hasmo, LCP, FT, all stuff like that. And so why play something you've already played before? You know, let's play something good, something useful, something new, hopefully something that's updated, and go for there. And like you said, you're going to run in those pitfalls where it might have some weird old SSRs that you're just reading the scenario now. I mean, I do it constantly. Anytime I pop out a scenario, I'll look through the scenario special rules. One will hit me with a left, screwball, and then I got to research 20 minutes into it, for your quick pickup game, into figuring out how the hell's SSR rule works.
Well, I mean, the other thing is that choosing a scenario, for some of us, it's not an easy thing to do. Especially for those of us who don't want to play the usual suspects ever again. I would be quite happy never to play any of the core module scenarios, you know, the ones that came in the original module, or even things like any of the 89 annual scenarios. I've played them all.
All right,
several
Pete.
Times.
All right, let's stop the podcast. Let's go with a throwdown of Gavin Take. Let's go.
No. I'm saving that one for myself, man. I need to do research on that one.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. But yeah,
I'm going to slam it. I'm going to slam it on historical basis. I'm going to slam it on. It teaches the wrong things. It's worthless as a teaching scenario. It bears no relation to history. And it artificially props up your tactical ineptness.
It's a little different,
you
know, one.
It gives you a get out of jail pass because of the high leadership that's involved. You know, with a high leadership DRM, you know, a -3 leader, you can make poor decisions with your fire attacks, but that -3 is going to get you out of trouble more often than not.
Yeah, every time. Every time.
Yeah.
Every time. But yeah, I think the most, maybe the most underutilized play aid, again, pre-game preparation, is your nationality capability charts. I got to be honest with you. I'm flipping through the American one right now. Because I remember this before. Essentially, the notes on the American one is, plentiful ammo is included. Deduct one black chip for normal ammo. It's like OBA. And the rest of the crap is USMC. And pretty much there are no miscellaneous notes. But when you go to Hungarian, Axis Minors, Finnish, it's all those notes within that chart are pretty much game-altering manifestations of the rules. The Japanese, Banzai Charge, Reduce Strength, you know. It's got stuff you need to know. So you're not treating your Japanese 447 like your other guys. But that's pre-game, not in the middle of the game. Okay, what can my guys do? Pre-game.
And this is where pickup games, again, I want to play a Japanese scenario. Have you ever played Japanese before, either for or against? No. Now's not, a pickup game is not the way to learn how to do it.
Nope.
You're not going to learn anything. You're not going to retain any knowledge again because you don't know the rules for them. You've got no context to place your game experience against for retention.
Why don't you just teach me, Pete?
No, I don't have the free ASL time to teach, and I'm not cut out to be a teacher.
All right. And so therefore,
there are better teachers out there. I'm also not that good a player. I make a lot of mistakes in my own game, and I've got such limited playing time these days that I want to focus on improving my game.
Right. And so, like you said, pickup games, I mean, you might have a different expectation than me. Like, if pickup games, like, oh, I'll play anything, and if my opponent's better than me, she'll just teach me the rules. Where you might come against a player like yourself, which is not your cup of tea. You're not there to teach people to play the game. You're there to play the game, and that's just going to diminish the ASL experience for you. And especially if that's at a tournament during your free time, you don't want to burn that time because you have limited time at a tournament, and it's something we don't want to do.
If I go to ASLOC, when I go to ASLOC, right, I'm expecting to do sort of arrange a game at short notice with someone I already want to play, you know, and that's fine. But we still take that 20 minutes before the game to work through, to do a bit of work, you know. And secondly, we don't choose a scenario that neither of us have basic familiarity with either the nationality or the special characteristics that are involved.
Right.
So, for example, I'm probably not going to do a pickup game with caves. Or a pickup, with caves or that features Panji. The reason is I don't play those games normally, so the rules have not featured in my. I don't retain them.
Right, they're just you don't use them enough.
I don't use them at all. I don't play cave scenarios. That's right. One of the things I don't do. Because they just don't interest me. That part of ASL, World War II via ASL, just doesn't interest me as a game. Now, I'll read the history. Absolutely enjoy reading the history about it. But as a game, as part of ASL, leaves me absolutely cold.
Right, right. No, that's, and again, that's the usefulness of some play aids into dealing with caves. I don't even know if there are any play aids for caves. I got to be honest with you.
Oh, yeah. There's definitely.
There's got to be something out there. I'm not sure how.
There's also really good articles in the journals and things like that.
All right. How about this? You've got a rule section that's half a page. It's one column in your electronic ASL rule book. The play aid is 15 pages describing that one column. Do you have issues with that?
Well, and you could almost say that's the night rules.
Exactly.
The night rules are very short.
Yeah, six pages.
They're not very long at all. They're actually a lot. People get overwrought about night. Night is not that hard. The thing is, it's a lot harder to play face to face because you're not what you see on the tabletop. Does not match what the game is trying to represent. So you're having
right.
to imagine a lot of things.
Right.
Play a night scenario on. You play night on Vazel. Oh well. You cannot understand. Once you've played night on Vazel,
you lose your virginity to night on Vazel.
It holds no fear.
Right.
In fact, it's actually a better experience than it would be face-to-face. I won't play night scenarios face-to-face anymore.
Right. It'll remind you of so much stuff. It takes away a lot of the mysteriousness of night.
It's too much hard mental work. And ASL is a hard enough game to play mentally without adding more and more layers of artificial viewpoints.
Right.
Imagination. You have to keep more and more layers of imagination going simultaneously.
If the concept
and the rules is only half a page, right?
Right.
Most of those 16 pages better be purely process. About the process.
Oh, better way. Yeah. Better be.
It should not be about explanation.
Right.
And I don't think there is a section. I mean, the only one I can think of, and actually, is the Goliath rules, because most of the rules in that are in Chapter H footnote.
Oh, good Lord. Just delete them. Just delete them. Those are a nightmare, especially if you try to SSR some sort of bullshit truck to make it into a Goliath. Oh, my God. It just doesn't work.
Don't knock the Amy H. That is a brilliant scenario.
That's a piece of shit if I ever smelled one. But to be honest with you, the way the SSR is, I mean, it's just not conducive. There's so many loopholes in it, but I get the idea, but they could have made it a lot more simpler by just saying, you know, the driver just detonates a truck for 30 firepower factor like an FFE. That's literally all you have to say instead of saying, well, I treat it like a Goliath and you know, whatever. But
I think too many people tried to be too clever with that SSR.
Yeah, they tried.
In the play. I played it, I played it very simply. And it was hilarious.
Yeah. Exactly. Try to be too cute, like you said.
Have
you seen some of these guys at tournaments? They're not that cute.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But, I mean, the guy I was playing at Aslock, we had a blast because we took 20 minutes to work it out. And during that 20 minutes before the game,
oh my God,
we were drinking and stuff like that. You know, we just figured it out because it's an SSR. It's not in the main body of the rules, right?
Right, right.
So what we figured out, okay. Oh, and because we took the time, I actually ended up with developing a plan on how to use it in the game very simply without bogging me down while we were discussing it. So I came out of that ahead of the game almost, of the rules overhead, because I took the time to discuss it, because I was already in that frame of mind. I was looking at the concept. I had a context.
So was that your ploy to delay your opponent, the game start time, so you don't get penalized by having to think about a half an hour how to use it?
No, we were drinking scotch.
Oh, there you go.
It was an afternoon game, and we were having a lot of fun, you know, because we got on really well. So it was a very relaxed environment.
All right, Pete. Top two play aids that you must have in a game.
A dice tower.
Dice tower? That's a play aid. Absolutely. Absolutely play
that's
aid.
What
a good,
I consider a play aid.
A good dice tower. A good
the IFT.
Not plastic
shit.
Well, the IFT is not a play aid. It's a, you have to have it. There is no summation of the IFT, though.
No. I'm saying the IFT, not the IIFT.
Oh, yeah. The IFT is, yeah.
Yeah, we would just ban that shit. It's an optional rule that should never have been made an optional rule.
Right.
It's like battlefield integrity.
Yeah. The one chart I love, terrain chart. Again, if you're dealing with a myriad of vehicles, again, you should know this. And I do this on my Valzo games. It's a lot of times I'll print on the map based upon, like, if I have a truck expenditure, a half track expenditure, fully track, I'll kind of do like a slash, especially if I have a really shitty vehicles, because I don't know those expenditures. And I'll take that chart, the movement point expenditures, and literally print them as a label on some of those terrain features. And so I'll pre-prep the game that way. That way I never have to look at the chart to see how many movement points it is.
Okay, the terrain chart, I prefer to have it in alphabetical order, not rules order.
Yeah, I agreed. And then, of course, I think some of the other ones, and again, I think it's been refined enough, I think the OBA chart, if you play a lot of OBA, especially, you know, a lot of guys like to do beach invasions, your naval OBA, stuff like that. It's good to have, but once you start playing it, it will become, like you said, just like night rules. It'll become second nature, and you won't have to refer to it after that.
The biggest thing is laying that first spotting round.
Right.
That's the most complex part of it.
Right. And after that, after you iron that out for five or six games, then it'll be second nature. And then choose games, you know, with concealments. A guy's not in a static position, but he's got concealed, just in different areas where you have to approach all that crap.
I would say that, okay, I've been playing for, 37 years? On and off. But for a lot of that time, at least 5 to 6 games a year. It's only recently that I bothered to read the artillery, you know, the OBA rules in full, but I read them in concert with the flowchart, and then I played a whole bunch of games with the OBA, not big games, but small games with small aspects of OBA.
And you're
now
a master.
I'm absolutely comfortable. Now I no longer avoid OBA. I used to avoid scenarios that had OBA.
Yep, all the time.
I don't bother anymore. It's just another scenario now. I used to avoid knight scenarios. Why? Because I hadn't played enough knight to learn them, to learn the concepts.
Yeah.
Now, then when I did, is I played
consecutively.
I played a a concerted, consecutive mini campaign of night scenarios, of about six night scenarios. And by the end of it, I was that comfortable with night. I will play it on Vazzle, will not play it face to face, at the drop of a hat.
Right. Absolutely. That's what anyone says about the night. Vazzle or nothing.
On the night, it's the best play aid ever written.
Yeah.
Article play aid.
Yeah, absolutely. Tons of examples.
Actually, for those of you who are just getting started with Hollow Legions and Desert, it's sort of a little bit out of date now. It may have some errors, but the old vernacular guide to Chapter F is actually really useful for getting rid of rules speak and getting it basically into a everyman language.
Yeah, that was my third pick. All right, Pete, that was another great session we have here. Nailing on play aids, what's good, how to use some, how many not to have, and essentially pregame preparation to make your games go a lot smoother and hopefully much more enjoyable for both you guys going on. And then hopefully you'll have a ASL opponent for the rest of your career. Cool.
Yeah, and by the way, dice glasses should be banned.
A good dice tower. All right. Thanks a lot, Pete.
Ciao.